Save big money and transform your home with new appliances now at Menards. We offer the lowest prices and the largest in-stock appliance selection ready to take home today. Check out top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade your home and save big money on new appliances at Menards. Shop our entire selection of appliance options online today at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Here we go.
Everybody is just on the beat screaming, kill, kill, kill. This is hockey.
Oh, my Lord. Wow.
This is the Puck Podcast.
I was very entertained and excited. I couldn't believe how good it was.
Shut your yap.
This is the Puck Podcast.
There's a point where it just becomes absurd.
That was gutless. Gutless.
This is the Puck Podcast.
Hi, I'm Wayne Gretzky, and you're listening to the real great one.
This is the Puck Podcast with Eddie Garcia and Doug Stolhan.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
From soggy Los Angeles, I'm Eddie Garcia along with Doug Stolhan. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Puck Podcast. It is Thursday, February the 1st, 2024. On this week's show, in the first period, we discuss the past week or so on and off the ice as we hit the NHL All-Star break. We've got the latest on the Canadian Junior Hockey League scandal. It's the Canadian Junior Hockey scandal. Also, a big trade involving one of the best teams in hockey and another big-name rookie gets hurt and more. Second period, Doug Plagans, the Florida Panthers radio play-by-play guy, stops by to talk about, shockingly, the Florida Panthers. And in the third period, we read your emails. All that and more coming up on this edition of the Puck Podcast. But before we get into all that, time to get into our quick off-ice report. A couple of minutes about what's going on with us. Doug, 2024 for me continues to be not the greatest year so far. We've got, you know, the mice.
All right, let's see. You've got the mice problem. You're still
it's not funny, though. This one, it's not funny, unfortunately. I don't have
anything. It's terrible.
I know. A very good friend of mine, his wife sent me a text message, and his wife, as far as I know, didn't have my number. I've never exchanged texts with her. And it said, hey, I need to talk to you. And I'm like, well, I'm hoping that this is about a surprise birthday party or something.
Right.
In my head, I said that. I didn't text her. I said, yeah, right. Okay, I'm available whenever. So she called me, and he's in the hospital, and he has cancer, and it's not good. So
that's terrible.
Yeah, I'm pretty bummed out about it. So, you know, just the you never know department. Obviously, that's
correct.
That's, you know.
He's somewhat your age.
We went to school together. I think he's like a year younger than me, though, or so. A little.
Oh, this is one of the two guys I know.
You do know of him, yeah. I don't, you know, you know him, yeah, you know him.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully, he can beat it. But when they call you like that, it doesn't sound good.
No.
Call everybody I know kind of thing.
Yeah. So I texted him and he texted me back and said he's going to give me a call here in a couple days. They're still trying to, you know, figure out exactly how bad it is, but he's in the hospital and
how far it's spread.
Yep. So
that's terrible.
Yep.
Well, it reminds you that the Ducks may suck, the Kings may be struggling, but who cares?
Ultimately, yes. Yes. So,
no, this is that's terrible.
Yeah.
And if anybody's going through anything like that, God, you know.
Well, I'm sure someone is who's listening, either themselves or
somebody they know. So, yeah, because you know. Cancer. Cancer is the one thing that I think every single person has either had it or knows somebody that has had it.
Sure. And of course, the longer you're alive, the better the odds are. I went for a long, long, long time before knowing anyone. You know, no one in my family had had it when I was growing up at all. There was like, you know, I don't mean to sound like a jerk when I say this, but there was like the one kid in school. You know what I mean? That, you know, was going through it and all that. But
Yeah, it's funny you say that about the kid in school. I started elementary school, and there was a kid that had the leg braces and the crutches. And, you know, typical of kids at the time, I'm sure he didn't have the greatest experience, but I don't remember thinking anything. Like, I remember knowing him, and he was just a kid that had a handicap. And then a few years later, he didn't. And it wasn't until our reunion, one of our high school reunions, that I'm like, hey, what was the deal with that? I never asked you. I didn't know you well enough back then. And he told me what his ailment was. And he said that, you know, they did some surgery in 1 year and it fixed it. And he was able to walk. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing. And he's like, yeah, it completely changed my life, obviously. And I'm like, I would say. But I just remember going back, and you talk about the kid with cancer. There's always, when you're kids, you're just kids. And you don't really think too much about the larger picture. And you're very selfish. And but no, it was, that's terrible. Hopefully he gets some good news here soon. And they're able to treat it, they're able to operate, they're able to do something.
Yep. And I don't know. I've been thinking about how your life can be turned upside down with, you know, news in, and you know, I mean, he had been feeling ill. It wasn't like it just came out of nowhere, like one day, you know, but it's like, you know, it's, that's the thing with when you're not feeling well, how much do you, you know, oh, it's just, I'm just not, everybody goes through times where they're physically, right, you know, feeling something and whatever. So how long do you put things off and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you know,
especially if it's gradual.
Yeah. You know,
I'm a little bit weaker. I'm a little bit more tired. I'm a little bit this, I'm a little bit that. And then if it's overnight where you go from feeling fine to feeling drastically different, then you would go to a doctor. But when it's gradual, you convince yourself, I'm just getting older, or I did something, or I just need to shake it off. I can't shake this cold I had a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And Jackie and I talk about this all the time, and I'm sure it's true with you and Karen and many people listening. We are much more concerned about the other person than we are about ourselves. You can overlook just about anything when it's you. But when you see somebody you love in pain or suffering or something, then you're like, hey, what's going on? What can I do to help? You got to get this checked out. So our trump card is always the, you know, I don't need to see a doctor. And then you play the, if it was me, would you make me go see a doctor? All right, I'll go see a doctor. You know, it's like, the, mm-hmm. because yeah, you're able to overlook things. You're able to tough it out for yourself, but it's the people you love that will force you to go see it. But that's terrible. And my favorite comedian of all time, Bill Hicks, he was not feeling well, but was young. It can't be anything serious. Went in, you got pancreatic cancer. You don't have long to live. Well, hell, you know. And Brian Murray, the old GM of the Senators, right? He didn't go in until it was too late to get colon cancer checked and told everybody, go get it checked, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I let my pride and my humility get in the way of my health. Stupid.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying this is what happened to your friend.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm saying it's typical of humanity, unfortunately.
Anything you want to share?
Well, on the light of that.
Yeah, I know.
Certainly not.
Okay. No.
All is well. All is well.
Well, if you happen to listen to last week's show until the very, very end, you hopefully humorously heard me remember, oh, no, I forgot to play the horn. You know, we're doing this silly thing now where I have the literal goal horn in my hand or sitting next to me here that I was going to play. If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that we used to have a goal horn we'd play to signify the end of the periods with 3 of 3 periods on the show, you know, like a hockey game. And I had forgotten to do it. And so at the very, very end of the show, I just played it. So the Boston Bruins are back for another week. So hopefully
That was a quick first period.
Hopefully I won't.
Welcome Doug Plagans.
I will not forget, hopefully, to do it at the end of each period. So with that, let's get into the first period. And as I'm sure you all know, we will be wrapping up the, I always say it, even though it's not accurate, but it just, I can't help it. The first half of the NHL season, even though it's not the first half. We're past the halfway point of the NHL season by a couple of weeks, I think, or yeah, at least a week. I don't know why.
50 games.
Yeah, I don't know why they do that, but that's what they do in the NHL. So we're at the All-Star break, and we're now off for, well, I don't know, 9 to 10 days, I guess. No hockey games except for the, oh boy, the exciting All-Star game coming up this weekend, which we all can't help but watch.
You're confusing the Kings schedule with the NHL schedule. We're only off for 4 days.
Really?
Yeah. The games resume Monday.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
I didn't know that. Wow. The Kings are off for 9 or 10 days. 9 days, yeah, I think.
They have remember, every team has their bye week.
Right.
So they happen to coincide with the All-Star break. Oh, it's on the back end of that.
Well, that shows you how locked in I am with my team schedule. So, yeah. Well, very good. I don't need to ask you now. What the hell are we going to talk about in next week's show?
We're going to talk about the Rangers and Avalanche game on Monday and the Islanders Leafs. It's a double, well, not doubleheader because they're playing at the same time, but those are two great games.
All right. Well, I have now been educated, and maybe you have as well listening. So let's get in on the first period. A quick note on every game over the past week and 1 day. And we'll start last Wednesday, where we had 7 games on the schedule, and the Avalanche down the Capitals 6-2 with Colorado's Nathan MacKinnon continuing his amazing season with a pants trick, a 4-goal game. Goals 27, 28, 29, and 30. He also had an assist, a natural hat trick in the mix as well. That gave him the NHL points lead with 82 and also extended his point streak at home to 24 games, breaking a tie with Joe Sakic, the longest in franchise history. Kale McCarr also scored his 76th goal. That is the most by a defenseman in franchise history. Jets
Who do you think that broke the record of?
It's a good question.
Avalanche Nordiques franchise history goal scoring defenseman.
Eric Johnson, maybe. I don't think he scored a lot, but he played a lot of games as a defenseman.
I'm trying to think who would be there long enough. It wouldn't be Foot. He didn't shoot enough, but he was there for a long time and he was on good teams. I'm gonna look it up.
All right, look it up.
Yeah.
The Jets edge the Maple Leafs 1-0 in overtime. Elias Samsonov back in the lineup and obviously looking pretty good here. 32 saves in the shutout. Austin Matthews had the only goal of the game in overtime, his 39th of the season. And Laurent Brossoit had 29 saves in net in the tough luck loss for Winnipeg. I think I got that wrong. That must have been the Maple Leafs beating the Jets, not the other way around.
It was the Maple Leafs beating the Jets.
Yeah, 1-0 Maple Leafs over the Jets, not Jets over the Maple Leafs. Samsonov, the shutout. Austin Matthews, the game winner, the only goal, and Laurent Brossoit, 29 saves in the loss. For Winnipeg, he does get credit for a shutout, even though he did lose because he didn't allow a goal in regulation. So that's how that works, if you didn't know.
Randomly, yeah. I think it's the worst matchup for difference in jerseys, the Leafs and the Jets. Watching that game, they looked so similar. Now, the Leafs wore these black jerseys, so that helped. But you see a Jets player, and your mind, because it's blue, white, and white helmet, it just reminds you the helmet is different, but very few differences. And when you watch some games, you're like, there's no doubt which team is the Hurricanes, which team is the Flyers. This one was very similar jerseys. But Ilya Samsonov, man, did he need that.
Speaking of the Hurricanes, they get by the Bruins in Boston, 3-2. Jordan Martinook gets the game winner in the third period for Carolina. In the loss, Brad Marchand had a pair of goals, numbers 22 and 23. Blues knock off the Canucks in Vancouver 4-3 in overtime. Braden Schenn gets the overtime game winner. Puse Suter had all three Canucks goals for the hat trick, 10, 11, and 12, and he scored all of them in the third period. Panthers beat the Coyotes 6-2 in a game that started with back-to-back fights on back-to-back faceoffs in the first 7 seconds of the game. The bad blood stemmed from a hit from Arizona's Jason Zucker on Florida's Nick Cousins in their last meeting. Cousins is still out with an injury as a result of that hit. Matthew Tkachuk had 2 goals for Florida, and Sam Reinhart gets his 35th of the year. And Panthers head coach Paul Maurice moved into second all-time in games coached with 1,813. Sabres knock off the Kings in LA 5-3. Buffalo rallied down 3-1 with four straight goals. J.J. Paterka had two of them. And the Kraken beat the Blackhawks 6-2. Tomas Tatar, two goals for Seattle. Chicago has lost 18 straight road games at that point.
A few games to talk about. First of all, that Leafs game. It was 1-0. It was scored in overtime. It was an old school, and there's no stakes to it, so it wasn't a playoff feel where you're on the edge of your seat. But when it's 0-0 and you can tell both goalies are playing well and both teams are playing well defensively, there's a tension in those games that is fun, because every shift in the offensive zone matters, every turnover matters, every power play matters. So those are fun to watch. And even though it was 1-0, it was a very fun game to watch. You may not think it of a 1-0 game. Obviously, a big game between Boston and Carolina, and important for Carolina to get a win on the road. They are still underachieving just slightly. So that was a big one. And then, of course, the Avalanche game. You can't overlook a pants trick from Nathan MacKinnon, one of the star players on home ice. Unfortunately, no pants hit the ice. But I was going to guess it was Sandis Ozlinch that he had broken the record of. But I was thinking in my head, Sandis wasn't there long enough to score 75 goals. Well, I was right. He scored 72. He is third all time. So Cale Makar has broken the record of Tyson Barrie. How about that? I thought it would go farther back than that. And this is, there's a name relevant to you, Eddie. I said Adam Foote. He's seventh now all time. Second, Tyson Barrie. Third, Sandis Ojlinch. Fourth, John Michael Lyles, who sounds like an action figure from the, or an action star from the 80s.
Yeah.
Fifth, Eric Johnson. And sixth is Rob Blake.
Oh,
I didn't think Rob Blake was there long enough to be that high on the list. Did you?
No, not really. No.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, let's move on to Thursday. We had nine games to tell you about, including the Oilers shutting out the Blackhawks 3-0. Calvin Pickard, 27 saves in net in the shutout. Connor McDavid had two goals, numbers 18 and 19. So that's 15 straight wins at the moment, or at least at that time, for Edmonton, two away from tying the NHL record for consecutive wins. And for Chicago, 19 straight road losses, fourth longest road losing skid in NHL history. Canadians get by the Islanders 4-3 in New York. Patrick Waugh returning. Did I say in New York? It wasn't in New York. It was in Montreal, because Patrick Waugh returned to Montreal for the first time as head coach of the Islanders. Sean Monahan had a pair of goals, including the game winner late in the third period. Bo Horvat gets his 20th in a losing effort for New York. Hurricanes get by the Devils 3-2. Carolina jumped out to a 3-0 lead, then held off New Jersey for the win. Devils head coach Lindy Ruff had to leave the game after taking a puck to the face. Assistant Travis Green ran the team in his absence. Carolina improved to 10-2-1 in their last 13 games. Bruins edge the Senators in Ottawa 3-2 in overtime. Brad Marchand gets the OT game winner that gave him 396 career goals. He passes Ray Bourque for sixth most in Bruins history. It was also Marchand's 19th career overtime goal, tying him with Jaromir Jagr for third most in NHL history, trailing only Alexander Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby. Red Wings shut out the Flyers 3-0. Alex Lyon, 30 saves in net for Detroit, his third career shutout. Predators get by the Wild in Minnesota 3-2. Nashville scored all three of their goals in the third period, with defenseman Roman Josi getting the game winner. Nashville 21-11-1 in their last 33 games with that win. Stars edge the Ducks 4-3 in overtime. Defenseman Thomas Harley gets the overtime game winner. He is the only NHL defenseman this season to have more than one overtime game-winning goal. And Anaheim had lost 11 in a row in Dallas. Lightning beat the Coyotes 6-3. Nikita Kucherov, a goal and two assists to take over the NHL goal-scoring lead in his battle with Nathan MacKinnon. Tampa Bay had won 7 of 8 at that point. And the Blue Jackets beat the Flames 5-2. Columbus scored three unanswered goals in the first period. That's probably third period. Why would I say three unanswered in the first period? Man, I don't know. Maybe it was. Alexander Texier scored the first goal. Alexander Texier scored the first shorthanded goal of the season for Columbus. And Adam Fantilli scored his 12th goal of the season.
I'm not sure where you were going with the unanswered goals, but it was 2-2 after the first period, and they scored the next three. And Correct. It was one in the second, two yeah. in the third, and right. Fantilli had the empty netter to seal it. So shorthand and 2-2, they scored a shorthanded goal, a power play goal, and an empty net goal. So 5-on-5, the Flames were doing great. Everything else, they sucked. Loved the Flames jerseys in that one, by the way. It was the old horse head. I like that look. That's an unacceptable loss for Calgary on home ice, trying to get back into the playoff race. That's a tough loss of 2 points. Carolina, very impressive to beat Boston on the road, fly home, and beat New Jersey on home ice the next day. Two huge wins within 24 hours of each other for the Hurricanes. For the Devils, I know you've talked about it a lot on your Locked On LA Kings, your home for LA Kings coverage Monday through Friday on YouTube and wherever you get podcasts.
Thank you.
You're talking about making a coaching change for your Kings because they are still in a playoff race, or they're still in a playoff position, but it's tenuous. I got to think, I know they apologized to Lindy.
Yeah.
You got to wonder what his status is with that team because they are buried in the standings. We're going to get to that in a second. But how far do you let this go before you try and salvage something? There's 35, 36 games left in the season, and you're not in a playoff spot. And in fact, you're three positions out of a playoff spot right now. You'd have to pass three teams to get into a playoff spot. So it's not good for a team that had high expectations going into the season. And for the Flyers, a tough loss. They're playing their heart out. We're going to talk more about the goalie situation in a bit in the Law and Order portion of the show. But Samuel Ersson only faced 17 shots total in the game against Detroit and gave up 3 goals. Meanwhile, Alex Lyon had 30 saves. So they did everything they could offensively. They got they went up against a great goalie, but they got to get better goaltending from Samuel Ersson. I know one goal would have lost that game, but still, when you only face 17 shots, you got to make more than 14 saves.
Friday, we had 4 games. The Golden Knights beat the Rangers in New York 5-2. Jonathan Marchessault gets the hat trick for Vegas, goals 23, 24, and 25. And New York's lead in the Metro was down to 2 points at that point. Avalanche knock off the Kings 5-1. Logan O'Connor with a pair of goals, and Alexander Georgiev had 26 saves. Nathan MacKinnon a goal and an assist to reclaim the goal-scoring lead from Nikita Kucherov. Panthers get by the Penguins in Pittsburgh 3-2 in a shootout. Sam Reinhart had a goal in regulation, his 36th, and the shootout game winner. Blues beat the Kraken in Seattle 4-3 in overtime. Pavel Buchnevich a pair of goals in that one for St. Louis. He had the goal in the third period to tie it and then got the game winner in overtime to win it.
The only game I want to touch on there is the Penguins game. It was 2-1 Florida with less than a minute left. They pulled the goalie. Evgeny Malkin scores to tie it, send it to overtime. They ended up losing in the shootout, of course. But when you're battling for a playoff spot, that's a huge point for Pittsburgh. So getting a point in a loss is big for them, but they are much like the Devils, still on the outside looking in and still can't get enough traction going to gain ground, catch and pass somebody in the playoff race. And I know you and the Predators and a lot of teams at the on the fringe of the playoffs right now, we're looking at that Blues Kraken game hoping it would end in regulation. It did not. Them getting a point for losing and making it a 3-point night was big for both of their playoff hopes, but a big win for the Blues. Unfortunately, I think it would be the last one they had of the week.
Let's move on to Saturday. 14 games on the schedule as the Oilers beat the Predators 4-1 for their 16th straight win, one shy of tying the NHL record. So that winning streak for Edmonton will continue on through the weekend, and we'll see if it resumes next week. But as we're recording this show, Edmonton's still riding that winning streak. It's been a few weeks now since we've talked about a Oilers loss. Connor McDavid had a goal and 3 assists. Leon Draisaitl got his 800th career point with a goal and 2 assists. Goalie Stuart Skinner improved to 19-2 in his last 21 starts. Edmonton 24-3 in their last 27 games. Corey Perry made his Oilers debut in that one, did not have a point in just under 13 minutes of ice time in that one. Canucks beat the Blue Jackets in overtime 5-4. Brock Besser, the hat trick for Vancouver, goals 28, 29, and 30. Elias Pettersson had 2 goals, including the overtime game winner, as Vancouver picked up their 71st point in their final game before the All-Star break. That is tied for the most in the NHL. Panthers get by the Islanders in New York 3-2 in overtime. Oliver Ekman-Larsson with the overtime game winner, and Sam Reinhart gets his 37th goal of the season and his 20th power play goal of the season. We'll talk more about him in the second period with friend of the show, Doug Plagans. Maple Leafs defeat the Jets in Winnipeg 4-2. Austin Matthews gets his 40th goal of the season, also recorded his 600th career point as Toronto wrapped up a sweep of a home-and-home against Winnipeg. Bruins down the Flyers in Philadelphia 6-2. David Pastrnak, 2 goals, 32 and 33 for him. Boston won for the 7th time in 8 games. Going into the All-Star break, they had 71 points, most in the East, and tied with Vancouver for the most in the NHL at the All-Star break. Stars beat the Capitals 5-4 in overtime. Defenseman Thomas Harley, 2 goals, including the overtime game winner for the 2nd straight game. That's his 3rd overtime game winner this season. In the loss, Alexander Ovechkin for Washington scored his 9th of the year for his career. That's goal number 831. He is now 64 goals away from breaking Wayne Gretzky's all-time record. Rangers roll over the Senators in Ottawa 7-2. New York was down 2-0 in the 2nd period, scored 7 straight goals by 7 different players. Artemi Panarin was one of them. He gets his 30th of the year. And Jonathan Quick gets the win, number 385 for his career. He's now 7 wins away from passing Ryan Miller to become the all-time winningest American-born goalie in NHL history. New York wrapped up that last game before the break with 58 points, leading the Metropolitan Division. The Lightning knock off the Devils 6-3. Braden Point with 2 goals for Tampa Bay, number 24 and 25 for him. And Victor Hedman had 3 assists to reach the 700 career point mark. Red Wings down the Golden Knights 5-2. Dylan Larkin, 2 goals. He hit 200 in his NHL career. Hurricanes over the Coyotes 3-1. Dmitry Orlov tied it with 36 seconds left. And then Jesper Fast won it with 13 seconds to go as the Hurricanes pull one out there. Penguins get by the Canadiens 3-2 in overtime. Marcus Pettersson with the overtime game winner for Pittsburgh. You had the Flames blanking the Blackhawks 1-0. That was in Chicago, so the road winning streak. It's still going on for the Blackhawks, but that loss did not extend that. Jacob Markstrom.
Oh, that was in Calgary.
Are you sure?
I'm looking at it, yeah.
Okay. Then what is that, 20 straight road losses then, I believe? I'm not asking you. I'm speaking aloud. I'm not asking you about that. So
yeah, I don't know that.
So,
but I do know that game was in.
Well, we do know that the road losing streak for Chicago is intact as we go into the All-Star break. Ducks defeat the Wild in Minnesota 3-2. Troy Terry with 2 goals for Anaheim, and the Sabres down the Sharks in San Jose 5-2. JJ Paterka 2 goals again as Buffalo outscored San Jose 3-0 after the first period.
You mentioned Jonathan Quick 7 wins away, right, from being correct, the all-time. You said on your show that you think he's going to get the record this year.
Yes.
Correct? Yes. Do not. We're past the halfway part of the season. We've at the 49 games played for the Rangers so far this year. He has 10 wins. He would need 10 in the next 33 games. And I don't think he's going to play enough, or he would need 7 in the next. I don't think he's going to play enough because they're in a tight playoff race.
Have you seen Igor Shesterkin play this season?
Yes.
Quick's basically the number one goalie now.
We'll see down the stretch. I hear what you're saying, but they know who they need to ride in the playoffs. And
well,
we'll see. But that was a get-right game for them because they've been struggling for a lot of different aspects of their game recently. So that was a big win for them, especially the 7th straight. Tough loss for Minnesota. You can't lose to the Ducks on home ice, much like Calgary losing to Columbus on home ice. That's unacceptable when you're in a playoff race and you're trying to gain ground. The Islanders, we haven't seen nearly the swing that we've seen from some of the other coaching changes, namely Edmonton. We've never seen a coaching swing like this as we've had in Edmonton. Their last loss was December 19th. We are now in February. It's insane how hot they've been. The Flyers' problems continue in net as they give up 6 goals granted to a very good Boston team. But again, Samuel Ersson got the start, got pulled after giving up 4 goals on 14 shots. They bring in Cal Peterson and his dog Spot. He gives up 2 goals. And now you're up 6. That's a very local reference if you're a Cal Worthington fan from back in the day. I'm sure you're not if you're listening to this, because we got people from all over the world. Why would they know Cal Worthington?
Go see
Look up his commercials.
Go see Cal. Go see Cal.
Yeah, look up his commercials. He was a crazy man that sold cars in the Southern California area, and he would do wing walking. He would do all kinds of ridiculous stunts to try and get people to hear about his show, and it worked because I'm still mentioning him 40 years later.
And his dog Spot was always some exotic animal. Elephant, tiger.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Anyway, but no, it's a we're getting into very meaningful games for some teams, you know, and you watch these and you're like, well, this is a big 2 points for this team. This is a big 2 points for that team. And when you see teams like Minnesota, like Calgary, Calgary got the 2 points, but Winnipeg is in a battle for the top of the Central Division. They lose back-to-back to Toronto. The Devils losing again to the Lightning. The Hurricanes winning again in a close game. Arizona's fallen on hard times after a very good start to the season. They're slipping out of the playoff picture slowly but surely. It's these are getting to be meaningful games. And if you're Thomas Harley, boy, do you have some confidence in the overtime.
When keep you take shooting.
Yeah. Yeah. Get me the puck and get out of the way, because that guy has the touch right now. And with 3-on-3, there's plenty of room for a big man like him. He can create some space, and yeah, he is feeling it.
By the way, for Chicago, it is 20 straight road losses, 0-19-1, the record. And that's not even a franchise record for them. The franchise record for Chicago is 22 in a row. So they haven't even set their own franchise record, and yet it's one of the longest road losing skids in the history of the NHL. So
my goodness.
Not good to be in to have another team that's in that list as well.
Yeah, when do you plan the dad's trip, the mom's trip kind of thing, you know? We're losing. We're just going to go, and maybe they can make you some chicken soup in the hotel. Yeah.
Well, you feel better. If you're Edmonton, you might want to get those trips going so they can have some good times.
You ain't kidding. I wonder how much superstition there is of them doing exactly the same thing and people showing up at the rink at the same time, and, you know. If you're one of those people that eat the same, like Derek, who was it that had the 7-goal game? And he's like, I had chicken the rest of my career. If you're that kind of a superstition, you've been eating the same meal before the game since December 19th. You're tired of it. The All-Star break came at just the right time.
Let's move on to Sunday. We had just two games. The Blues beat the Kings 4-3 in overtime. Braden Schenn, his second overtime game winner of the week. Kraken down the Blue Jackets 4-2. Jordan Eberle, a pair of goals for Seattle. And Yegor Chinnikov had both goals for Columbus in the loss. Just one game on Monday. Senators down the Predators 4-3 in overtime. Ottawa was down 3-0 after the first period, then scored 4 unanswered goals. Claude Giroux gets the OT game winner. Two games on Tuesday. Blue Jackets blank the Blues in St. Louis 1-0. Elvis Merzlikins 21 saves in the shutout. And Dmitry Voronkov scored the only goal of the game. Jordan Bennington, 21 saves in the tough loss for St. Louis. And the Sharks shut out the Kraken 2-0. Mackenzie Blackwood with 32 saves in the shutout. Mark-Edward Vlasic and Jan Ruda, third period goals for San Jose to get the victory.
How about a goal from Mark-Edward Vlasic?
How about it?
Happy, and a game winner for him. I know Braden Schenn was a king a long time ago, but does it still hit when he scores against you to beat you? Just
not really. No, he didn't play. I don't even think he had a full season with the Kings. He was a former first round pick, so there's that. But yeah, he was shipped off for Mike Richards back in the day, and Wayne Simmonds, who actually is coming up later in the show, believe it or not.
I believe it. Because I know what the story is.
And on Wednesday, we had three games. This was the final day of action before the All-Star break. The Kings down the Predators in Nashville 4-2. Former first-round pick. Speaking of former Kings first-round picks, Alex Turcotte scored his first career goal. David Rittich, 39 saves in nets. Senators get by the Red Wings in Detroit 3-2 in overtime. Shane Pinto with the OT game winner for Ottawa. And the Ducks beat the Sharks 3-2 in overtime. Frank Vetrano, the overtime game winner.
Frank Vetrano goes into the All-Star break as an All-Star with a game winner in overtime. I like that the NHL saved the best for last. The last game before the All-Star break was between the Ducks and Sharks.
I did have that thought as well.
My goodness.
Before the break was one that not a lot of people probably were checking out.
I felt good for Alex Turcotte scoring his first goal. You could see the celebration. And then moments later, he was on the ice for a goal against. but it got waved off. But I did notice that he had the joy of scoring his first goal, and then like 30 seconds later, he was banging his stick on the ice because he didn't cover a guy in the slot that scored. And but it did get waved off. So good for him to score that first goal. The Kraken losing to the Sharks, very bad for their playoff chances. You know, it's not death knell, but you know what I'm saying. You got to get those 2 points. The Blue Jackets beating the Blues in regulation. That's another one that's a tough loss. And the Predators, you're up 3-0 against the Senators. You gotta win that game. You gotta win that game. You gotta close that out and get the 2 points. They didn't. They at least got 1 point. But nice comeback win from the Senators, who are an awful team. But I continue to watch them play and think, how can this team be this bad? Because Tim Stützle is good. Brady Tkachuk is good. Claude Giroux is still good. Vladimir Tarasenko has still got some jam in him. It's just, how is this team that bad? And yet they are. I don't watch them often enough, but my goodness, they are struggling. So we go into the break.
By the way, what are they waiting for on getting a coach there? You know what I mean? Like,
what's the urgency?
I mean, I guess there's no urgency, but it doesn't.
I think it's wait
Jacques
till the
Martin office. Is just. I mean, honest to God, he just looks like he's sitting there, like, all right.
No, I think it's. I think it's wait till the season's over when they can interview other teams' assistant coaches. You can't interview an assistant coach right now.
But I mean,
now.
You know, like, I don't know. Craig Berube is still sitting out there. No, you
Craig
don't want
Berube
a guy.
Don't want to coach that team.
How do you know if you don't ask him? You think they've asked him?
I don't know, but if I'm Craig Berube, I got probably better options than coaching an awful team. That because he's still getting paid, so it's not like he needs the money. I'll wait for a better offer. Thank you.
All right.
You know,
I just don't.
I think they're waiting to interview some assistant coaches in the offseason, and so they know this season's lost. Jacques Martin, it's kind of like the beat the old school lessons into these young players.
He's the substitute teacher, you know.
Exactly. You're gonna finish out the year. He knows he's not there long term. He's not looking to coach for another 10 years. So finish out this season. Thank you very much, and then we'll hand it over to somebody else.
All right, let's check the standings as we go into the All-Star break. We will start in the West and in the Pacific Division. It is the same top three that we had last week. Vancouver, Las Vegas, and Edmonton. The Canucks, as I mentioned earlier, 71 points, which is tied for the most points at the All-Star break in the NHL. You had in the Central Division a shuffling of all three teams. Colorado is in first place at the break with 67 points. They were in second place a week ago at this time. Dallas moved up from 3 to 2. They're 1 point back of Colorado with 66 points. And then Winnipeg slid from number one down to number three, but they're just 2 points behind Colorado. The back-to-back losses to Toronto obviously did not help Winnipeg's efforts in holding on to the top spot in the Central at the All-Star break. Your two wildcard teams in the West are the Kings and the Blues. St. Louis moving into the number two wildcard spot, knocking Nashville out of the playoff picture at the moment, although they are tied, St. Louis and Nashville, with 54 points. So obviously it's very, very close, with the Blues currently holding the tiebreaker. Seattle is 2 points out of a wild card spot. Over in the East, in the Metropolitan Division, you had a little bit of a change, but New York is on top of the division. Carolina moves up from the third spot to number two, while Philadelphia drops from 2 to 3 when you look at the top three there. In the Atlantic Division, you've got Boston on top with 71 points, tied with Vancouver for the most at the break. Florida is in second place, but a little bit closer to Boston, kind of putting something together. And then Tampa Bay is in the third spot. Your wildcard teams in the East are Toronto and Detroit. And correct me if I'm wrong on this. Is this right that the Islanders are the next team?
Yeah.
And they're 6 points back?
Yes.
Here's the thing. How did that happen? Yeah.
Well, here's
because didn't it seem like there was a – I mean – it seemed like there was a fairly decent little pack, right, of wildcard teams, and now suddenly the first team outside looking in is 6 points back?
Here's how that happened.
Okay, yeah, please tell me.
Two things. One, yeah. You're locked on LA Kings every day.
But you still, we do a weekly show. Go ahead.
I understand. Hear me out. So you're not watching as many Eastern Conference games because the Kings primarily play Western Conference. So the Islanders stink. They have 2 wins in the last 10 games. The Red Wings have been, the Red Wings have been hot. They have 6 wins in their last 10 games. So that's that gap. The Islanders, Penguins, and Devils combined have 9 wins in their last 30 games. So they're not gaining ground. The problem is Detroit looks like they're going to make a playoff spot. Toronto looks like they're going to make a playoff spot, whether it's a wild card or an automatic berth. But in the Metropolitan, Philadelphia is dropping like a hot rock. And they're not going to make the playoffs when it's all said and done. They've lost 5 straight going into the All-Star break. They have 56 points. They are 4 points ahead of the Islanders, 5 points ahead of the Penguins, 5 points ahead of the Devils, 5 points ahead of the Capitals. One of those teams is going to catch and pass the Philadelphia Flyers when it's all said and done for that third and final playoff spot in the Metro. So I think that group of teams is not chasing Detroit and Toronto. They are chasing each other and Philadelphia, and it's going to be a very, very competitive battle down the stretch. I don't think Washington's going to get it. I don't think they are going all in. Pittsburgh is all in. The Islanders are obviously all in with the coaching change. The Devils are all in. Only one of them is going to make the playoffs. Maybe two if something else happens with a wild card team. But it's going to be a hell of a battle for that third wild card spot or for that third playoff spot in the Metro. And I don't think Philadelphia is getting it for a variety of reasons. One, they've been overachieving all year, in my opinion. Two, they've lost their number one goalie probably forever. And it's just not looking good.
All right.
And so in the West, though, I will say it's amazing. You talked about the Canucks. They go into the All-Star break with a tied for the highest point total in the league with 71 points. It tells you how good of a season they've had that the Oilers have won 16 straight games and are still 12 points behind them.
Yeah.
My goodness. Vancouver has been on a heater all season, and they're one of the teams that does not want the All-Star break to show up. They are 8-0-2 in their last 10. Let's continue playing. Edmonton does not want the All-Star break to show up. There's other teams like your Kings, like the Predators, like the Kraken, like the Coyotes, like the Flames, the Wild. Although the Blues have 6 wins in their last 10 games, they're playing pretty well. They went in on a toe stub there against the Kraken or against the Sharks, but all told, they've been playing pretty well. Anyway, the race in the Central is going to be very interesting. You mentioned Colorado, Dallas, and Winnipeg, only separated by 2 points from top to bottom. Winnipeg with 2 games in hand, that's going to be a great race for seeding, because if you can avoid playing one of those teams and play a wild card team, that's obviously in your best interest, the easiest path to get advance in the playoffs, at least on paper. But it depends on who makes the playoffs and what kind of a role they're on. So it's going to be, for those of you that are in the playoff race, it's going to be a very fun and nerve-wracking next couple months. For the rest of us, we couldn't care less. We're just going to sit back and watch it and hope for chaos.
Speaking of the playoffs, your playoff matches as we enter the All-Star break in the West, you would have Colorado versus LA, Vancouver versus St. Louis, Vegas versus Edmonton, and Winnipeg versus Dallas. And in the East, Boston versus Detroit, New York versus Toronto, the Rangers, Florida versus Tampa Bay, and Philadelphia against Carolina.
I would say, and I'm not going out on a limb here, that Vegas-Edmonton matchup would be very delicious for a first-round matchup. The best player in the world against the defending Stanley Cup champ, that would certainly get a lot of attention as opposed to, say, a Dallas-Winnipeg that's not going to blow too many skirts up. And over in the East, I would say, Philadelphia is not going to make it. So I'm not going to count them as a potential matchup because I refuse to believe that they'll be in the playoffs when it's all said and done. So if you take the other group, Islanders, Penguins, Devils, Capitals, one of them replace Philadelphia, playing either Carolina or the Rangers in the first round, that would be very good. And the Florida, Tampa Bay, the all Florida matchup in the first round would be a juicy matchup as well.
As for your statistical leaders at the break, it looks like a two-man race for your points lead. It's Nikita Kucherov and Nathan MacKinnon, which we talked about as we were recapping the games. Kucherov right now with a one-point advantage over MacKinnon, 85 points to 84 points. Those are the only two guys that are in the 80s. here at the All-Star break. And in goal scoring, maybe a two-man race as well between Austin Matthews and Sam Reinhart, who we'll talk more about in a bit. Matthews has 40 and Reinhart has 37. Let's get to the news of the week. And we start with the unpleasant news that I don't know that it's dominated the hockey news necessarily, but certainly has, maybe in Canada it has, I don't know. But we do have the update on the sexual assault situation involving the 2018 World Junior Championship team from Canada. The four NHL players charged with sexual assault and the one player, former NHL player, all turned themselves into police. That would be Flyers goalie Carter Hart, Flames forward Dylan Dubé, Devils center Michael McLeod, and defenseman Cal Foote, as well as Alex Formanton, who's playing over in Europe, all turning themselves into police. Their legal representatives all maintaining that their clients are innocent. Police, of course, if you don't know, launched an investigation in 2022 after TSN reported that Hockey Canada had settled a lawsuit with a woman who said she was sexually assaulted by eight members of that team at a gala, after a gala celebrating their gold medal win. In 2018, charges were brought last week, resulting in the five players taking leave of absences from their respective teams. The players could face suspension by their teams or by the NHL, see their contracts terminated, or end up on a commissioner's exempt list. The NHL completed its own investigation of the incident, but has not made the results public. NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly said Tuesday the league would not be commenting at this time. The Calgary Flames had initially said that Dylan Dubé left the team for a mental health issue. The team was criticized for that and then released another statement saying that that was the explanation they were given as far as why Dylan Dubé was leaving the team. So basically not our fault. We were just
relaying. Come on. You and I knew why you left the team.
It was also reported this week that the Halifax Regional Police are continuing to investigate a sexual assault that occurred during the 2002-03 World Junior Championships involving members of the Canadian team.
Well, obviously a horrible story. As I texted you off the air, the only person I think I'm happy for is the alleged victim, who I hope feels some sort of justice for seeing these people finally be held to account after multiple investigations claimed nothing happened. They will get their day in court. We will see what the results of that are. But the evidence presented publicly does not look or sound good for these gentlemen. So if that is to be believed and is accurate, it doesn't look good for these guys. And I'm sure they are horrified of their potential future. But if they're guilty of what they've been accused of, then they deserve what they're finally getting. If they are innocent, we hope they are cleared somehow completely and quickly and get their reputations back if it's at all possible. Although this kind of stuff sticks with you forever, even if you're exonerated, the accusation sticks. So hopefully this case is somewhat quick. I thought it was interesting. Alex Formanton, I don't believe, was charged, yet he left his team in Europe and came back to Canada. Maybe he'll be charged at a later date. I don't know, but I thought that was interesting that he was not charged. But for the four guys that were, I mean, my goodness, I can't imagine them playing in the NHL anymore. Certainly not this season. Not until this is all cleared up. You can't let these guys back on the ice. And for the Flyers, just on the on-ice thing, that's your goalie. That was Carter Hart. That was the guy you wanted to have in net. So that hurts their playoff chances exponentially and has to hurt the psyche of the room to have a guy that you considered a friend, a teammate, to be facing these kind of charges. So very, very tough time for Team Canada and for these players. But from the sounds of things, long overdue that these people would be held to account if the accusations are to be believed.
Let's get to our trading places report. Of course, the trade deadline coming up in March, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. We had an early trade, though. We'll see if any dominoes fall with, you know, somebody getting the jump on things. Calgary Flames shipping off their All-Star Game representative, we were just talking about this, right? With Sandis Ozalich, right? Wasn't he the last guy that was traded and then ended up?
I don't know that he was the last, but he was traded and they were hosting it. He was on the Florida Panthers. He got traded to the Ducks. He still played in the All-Star game and they got a big ovation from the Panthers fans there because they knew that that was it. He was leaving. He was emotional on the ice. This is not in Calgary, so he won't get that same reception. But it does suck for the Flames fans that you no longer have a player at the All-Star game. And it's crazy that a team can't we wait until after the All-Star game and then we can make this trade so that we can at least have the guy we can root for and he's wearing our jersey and our colors? Nope. This is now the sixth All-Star that the Vancouver Canucks will have at the game.
The Flames shipping off Elias Lindholm, who had 9 goals and 32 points in 49 games this season, to the Vancouver Canucks in exchange for forward Andre Kuzmenko, a pair of defensive prospects, Hunter Busevich and Yoni Yermo, a 2024 first-round pick and a conditional 2024 fourth-round pick that has to do with the Canucks making the Western Conference Finals. Getting Lindholm gives the Canucks a solid two-way center and strength down the middle, go along with centers JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. 29-year-old Lindholm has reached the 20-goal mark 4 times in his career while surpassing 40 assists on 3 separate occasions. As for what Calgary's getting, Kuzmenko, who waived his no-trade clause for this move to happen, broke through to score 39 goals and 74 points before the Canucks then signed him to a 2-year contract worth $5.5 million annually. But this year, just 8 goals and 21 points in 43 games. He was also a healthy scratch on a few occasions. As for Busevich, he was a third-round pick in 2023 on pace to score 98 points in the OHL for the Kitchener Rangers. And Yermo was a third-round pick in 2020. He's playing in the top division in Finland. He's got 1 goal and 4 points in 35 games. But, of course, Elias Lindholm, the main man here, the most attention going to the Vancouver Canucks, who clearly... I mean, the Canucks have never won a Stanley Cup. Obviously, they're having a phenomenal season, and they're looking to go all in to finally get that Stanley Cup this year.
Yeah, it's a fantastic trade for both teams, and I love it because I give a lot of credit to Craig Conroy, the Flames GM, for being honest with himself and his organization about where they are. They're not in a playoff spot right now. They are, in fact, 4 spots out of a wild card spot, would have to catch and pass Arizona, catch and pass Seattle, catch and pass Nashville, catch and pass either St. Louis or LA to get into a wild card spot. So let's be honest with ourselves. We got 49 points through 49 games. We're not making the playoffs this year. And even if we did, we're not going very far. He inherited a team with some problems. This helps alleviate that. Elias Lindholm is a free agent at the end of the year, unrestricted free agent. I'm sure he's talked to him about extending his contract, realizes he's going to want more than he can afford. So he got great return for him. You get a first round pick, a conditional fourth round pick, 2 prospects and an active player for a guy that was going to leave your team in 33 games. Most likely it is a great trade for Calgary. Well done by Craig Conroy for being honest and getting good return. On the flip side for Vancouver, you've got a team that is having an unexpectedly great season. Maybe not unexpectedly in that room, but I don't even think they thought they were going to be in the race for the President's Trophy. Every team thinks they got what it takes in the room to be great. But 71 points in 49 games is phenomenal. If you go back to last year in the standings, Vancouver had, as I look it up, 83 points the entire season. So they are only 12 points away from matching their total of a season ago, a full season, and they've only played 49 games. So they are on a heater. And then they look at that roster, and you want to reward the team that has played so well and give them some belief. And I get that they've lost Kuzmenko, but they're not going to feel that. Getting Elias Lindholm to add to that roster, and especially having him join them at the All-Star break, where, as I said, he's going to meet teammates Brock Besser, Quinn Hughes, JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, Thatcher Demko. They're all there waiting for him. They're all there talking about, man, we can't wait to have you. This is going to be great. We're going on a cup run. He's got to be excited about being on a team. This is a great trade for both sides, and it's not a long-term commitment. They only have him for this year. Maybe they re-sign him. Maybe they don't. That's up to the future of, we'll see what Patrick Alvin can do with the salary cap after this year. But this is a great trade. Gives head coach Rick Tocchet more options for line combinations, especially in the playoffs. As you mentioned, a two-way guy that he can match up against another team's top center. I love the trade for Vancouver. I love it for Calgary. I think it's a win-win for both teams.
Let's check out the signings and roster moves this week. Of note, veteran forward Zach Parise made a bit of a surprising move. He signs a one-year deal worth $825,000 with the Colorado Avalanche. It was thought that if the 39-year-old was going to return, that he would return to the New York Islanders, where he last played and had played the last 2 years, but not the case. He said, you know what, I think I could get a better chance of winning a cup with this team. It'll be his 19th NHL season when he joins the Avalanche. He's played 1,224 games with 879 points for the Wild, Devils, and Islanders. And the Vancouver Canucks signed their general manager, Patrick Alvin, to a multi-year contract extension. Deals announced by Canucks president and hockey operations, Jim Rutherford. Terms were not disclosed. Alvin, 49, named the 12th GM in Canucks history in January of 2022. He's the first NHL Swedish GM. Canucks 33-11-5, 71 points this season. Obviously, he's done a good job there, and he gets a well-deserved extension.
Absolutely. Zach Parise, we'll see how much of a role he plays. Depth guy's 38, so give him a few minutes. Do you have any more signings?
Nope.
You got Ryan Poehling of the Philadelphia Flyers. He signed a two-year extension for $3.8 million, $1.9 million per season. So he signed that as well. So they're locking him up for a few more years. He's 25 years old. He is a former first-round pick of the Montreal Canadiens back in 2017, 25th overall. And so far this season, he has I can see why they wanted to lock him up, 14 points in 45 games. But a two-year deal for Ryan Poehling, obviously a two-way signing at left wing. And the one other signing of note, only because it's a guy that you remember from Kings great, Kevin Gravel, signing a two-way deal for $1.5 million with the Nashville Predators. You remember him well, don't you, Eddie?
I remember the name, but, you know.
You don't see too many jerseys of his walking around Staples Center?
No. By the way, Zach Parise is 39 years old. I was right. I got one thing right this week.
He is, no. Is he? He's 39?
HockeyReference.com says he is 39 years old.
Wow. Older than I thought. The guy was drafted in 2003, part of the great, great 2003 draft. And you think you've heard about that. Let me just run down the names of the 2000. The first round, Marc-Andre Fleury, Eric Staal, Ryan Suter.
Still playing, yeah.
Yep, Dion Phaneuf, Jeff Carter, Dustin Brown, Brent Seabrook, Ryan Getzlaff, Brent Burns, Ryan Kessler, Mike Richards.
Those guys are still playing,
actually. Ryan Boyle, Anthony Stewart, Corey Perry. Yep, that's quite a few. And that's just the first round. That was a loaded first round. My goodness.
Let's get to the ER report. New York Rangers forward Filip Hedl will miss the rest of the season with an upper body injury. He was helped off the ice at Madison Square Garden on Friday after a setback from an injury that has kept him out of the lineup since early November. Hedl went down during an optional morning skate. It was the first time he had skated with the team since he was injured back on November the 2nd with a suspected concussion. He missed 39 consecutive games, 6 assists in 10 games this season, but that is bad. I mean,
yeah,
when you're just going for a skate and you got to get helped off because – I don't know. I guess you're dizzy or whatever.
Yeah. Lightheaded. Yeah.
Definitely need to be shut down probably for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Columbus Blue Jackets rookie center Adam Fantilli going to miss 8 weeks with a lacerated calf. Suffered the injury against Seattle when he was delivering a hit on the boards to Jared McCann, and his skate obviously connected with Fantilli's calf. 19-year-old number three pick this year. Yep. 12 goals, 27 points in 49 games, and that means that the top three picks in this year's draft are all out right now with fairly significant injuries.
Leo Carlson's playing.
Oh, is he back from the knee injury?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Bedard is out with a broken jaw. Carlson was out with a knee injury. Now Fantilli is out with the calf injury.
Yep. It's been a tough season for the top three picks, unfortunately.
Buffalo Sabres winger Jack Quinn, surgery for lower body injury, expected to be out approximately 8 weeks. 17 games this season, he had 12 points. Calgary Flames will be without winger A.J. Greer for 8 weeks with a fractured foot. He was claimed off waivers in training camp for Boston, has been a regular on their fourth line. 6 goals and 10 points for him. Toronto Maple Leafs forward Kelly Yarncroc going to miss 3 to 4 weeks with a broken knuckle. Suffered it in practice when he got hit by a shot. 10 goals and 19 points for him in 46 games. Carolina Hurricanes goalie Frederick Anderson returning to limited on-ice conditioning work in his recovery from a blood clotting issue that has sidelined him since November. He's been on anti-coagulation medication since being diagnosed with a deep vein thrombosis and subsequent pulmonary embolisms. In his statement, GM Don Waddell said that Anderson's been working with medical experts on how to return to playing safely and had returned to some off-ice activities without complications. Anderson's 34 and, again, hasn't played since November, was 4-1 on the season, 2.87 goals against average, .894 save percentage in 6 starts. And Columbus Blue Jackets forward Patrick Laine has entered the NHL/NHLPA Player Assistance Program to receive care for an undisclosed issue. He'll be out for an indefinite period while getting treatment. He can return when he's cleared to do so by the program's administrators. During for Laine this year, he has been limited to 18 games due to injury, 6 goals and 9 points. He'd missed 9 games in October with a concussion prior to suffering a clavicle injury. Also has been a healthy scratch for the first time in his career and was sidelined 3 games with an illness as well. So his season is not going great, but hopefully he can get some treatment and help himself out there.
Yeah. Here's some breaking news for you, Eddie. Max Pacioretty is hurt.
Oh, no.
Washington Capitals. Well, it's not breaking news. It's just he's always been hurt the last few years. He's got a lower body injury that he suffered in their game this past Saturday against the Dallas Stars. They are not sure what the nature or severity is, but we'll see when he comes out of the All-Star break if he's able to resume. But, man, that guy has been snake bit. All they say is a lower body injury at this point, but pulled out of the game during the game and undetermined how severe the injury is.
Let's get to the Law and Order report. Montreal Canadiens forward Brendan Gallagher suspended 5 games without pay for an illegal check to the head of the Islanders' Adam Pelish. On Thursday, Gallagher assessed a match penalty. He'll forfeit $169,278.85. And New York Rangers defenseman Jacob Trouba was suspended for 2 games for elbowing Vegas Golden Knights forward Pavel Dorofeev. In New York on Friday, Trouba will forfeit $83,333.34. And that Brendan Gallagher hit was dirty as hell.
I mean,
that was just as dirty as it gets.
I would say he went after him, like looked like he was trying to squash his head like a melon.
Yeah, no look hit.
You get what I'm saying there, Eddie? Because it's Gallagher.
Yeah.
No, it was dirty. I mean, it was and he's not a guy that's known for being dirty.
He's a gritty little SOB, but yeah, I mean, that was just, I mean,
yeah, you got
that was as dirty as it gets. I mean, blindside hit to the head, obviously totally intentional. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what Adam Pellick did or if he was getting. If he was just saying, I'm going to get somebody back for something somebody did, I don't know. But he had obviously, you can't do that. I mean, my goodness, you got to treat others the way you would have them treat you. And do you want somebody coming by and picking your head with a hard hit directly to the head with you? And the funny thing is, not funny, ha-ha, but this is exactly the type of hit that got people into the Hall of Fame in generations past. Scott Stevens was lauded for this thing.
I mean, I don't know about a blindside hit to the head like that. I don't know about that.
Have you seen Scott Stevens hit on Lindros and Paul Kariya?
I mean, yeah, but they were kind of coming at him. I don't know that it was.
No, it was, you know, I'm saying picking the head and hitting with force used to be celebrated as this is a tough guy. You don't want to keep your head down when that guy's on the ice. You know, that was what the announcers showed over and over again. Now we're throwing this guy into the suspension for 5 games and well warranted. I mean, my goodness. I can only imagine Patrick Waugh being on the bench. I know he loves Montreal and they gave him a nice warm welcome. But my goodness, that was that had to set him off something fierce, because that was dirty.
Some random shots to close out the first period. I do have the goal horn in my hand. I'm not going to forget this week. NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman, congratulations. You are the longest serving chief executive in the four major North American sports. He passed, I don't even know who he passed this week, Bud Selig, who I don't know. He's been in office for over 11,000 days. Is it 31 years? That can't be right, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. 31 years.
Yeah.
He has overseen 59% of all players in NHL history that have played in the league.
Yep.
Wow.
He needs, and 56% of the games. He's been the commissioner for 56% of games in the NHL. All time.
I thought we'd been doing this show for a long time. We ain't been doing it for 31 years.
He's got at least another 10 years, too. I mean, because he's never going to go anywhere. He's going to have to die. And there's literally people that are 35, 36 years old that have never known an NHL that doesn't have him as the commissioner. It's ridiculous.
I'm trying to think when I started watching hockey.
He was the commissioner. Trust me.
I mean,
92, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was he did he just join? Did he just get on the job about that time?
He took over February 1st, 93.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's absurd. I mean, it's absolutely absurd that he's still in charge, but he works for the owners. He makes them money and they're not going to go anywhere. So it's unfortunate. The guy's already in the Hall of Fame. 31 years is enough, but he's not going anywhere, unfortunately, because they like the job he's doing. So,
and apparently he likes doing the job.
Oh, he definitely likes the power and the, but I mean, they need we've talked about this for a long time. They need a complete change in leadership from the top down in the NHL. And he's part of that, but it's not going to happen anytime soon. So congratulations to him, I guess. He's been a guest on this show many years ago. We had him as a guest, a one-on-one interview, if you remember.
Yeah. At the NHL 100, I think you talked to him.
Yeah.
Veteran forward Wayne Simmonds told the Canadian Press that although he has not officially made his announcement, he is done playing the game. 15 NHL seasons for him. Flyers, Kings, Predators, Devils, Sabres, most recently the Maple Leafs, where he played 18 games in Toronto last season. Finishes with 1,037 career games played and 526 points. Wayne Simmonds hanging it up. USA Hockey Congress approved legislation that will require all players under the age of 18 to wear neck laceration protection in games and practices. The new policy, which also extends to 19-year-old players at the boys and girls and junior levels, and for off-ice officials, or on-ice officials, I should say, off-ice would be funny, under the age of 18, it goes into effect on August the 1st. And finally, a family in Regina found an unopened case of 1979-80 OPG hockey cards that would possibly contain multiple Wayne Gretzky rookie cards. The case features 16 boxes of 48 packs with 14 cards per pack, meaning there are 10,752 cards in the unopened case, and several could be worth thousands, even millions of dollars. That is quite a find. I don't know exactly how that works out, but my goodness. And as a former card collector, even at my age, that's like finding a lost treasure or something. So this is apparently I don't know if it's gone up for auction yet or it's going to go up for auction, but
no, they'll take their time and get their, somebody will handle it for them. I think it's already the case. Actually, it is up for auction on the Heritage Auctions website. Let's see what the highest bid right now is. Well, these people are in luck. Not sure when the bid expires, but right now the highest bid is $1.575 million. Now, obviously, they're not going to get all of that. They have 23 days left in the auction. So,
will the people who buy this have like a team of scientists in different like suits? To be able to unpackage these things appropriately, so they're not, because they have to be like the corners be in pristine condition. You can't have any, you know, to make them as mint condition as possible.
Well, it says, according to this article, the person that is currently having the highest bid, and there's still time to be outbid, is remaining anonymous, but said they are not buying it for the cards. They are buying it for the gum.
Well,
they are big fans of chewing cardboard.
God knows that gum is just as good today as it was back
I think
then.
It's better. It's probably softened.
Good.
How about that? How about if that was the case? Like, you open this up and you get yourself a Gretzky rookie card, but it was the one up against the gum, and the gum has ruined the card because the oils have seeped out.
No! We're happy to welcome back to the show the radio play-by-play man for the Florida Panthers, NHL Network correspondent, and one of the hosts of Territory Talk, part of the Panthers Podcast Network, as well as Panthers Insider. You can follow him on X at Doug Plagans, Plagens. Hey, Doug, how are you?
Doing great, Eddie. Thanks for having me on.
Great to talk to you, and great to get some insights on the Florida Panthers this year. And I will be honest with you that going into the season, I was looking at teams that maybe, you always look for who's going to be the surprise teams and maybe the teams that could disappoint. And I kind of picked the Panthers as a team that wasn't going to make the playoffs, that they got hot at the right time. And, you know, they had injuries to start the season and they were going to get off to a slow start. Well, that hasn't been a great prediction on my part. They've been great. They're fourth in the NHL in points with 66. So, what did you think about this team at the start of the season?
Well, if we're turning back the clock, I would say first, going all the way back to January 1st, 2023. So we're talking a little bit over a year ago. At that point in time, the Panthers were still trying to work their way back into the playoff picture. We're talking midway through last season. And obviously, they got hot at the end, got hot at a good time. Ended up having the run to the cup final. The hot streak at the end, well documented. They edged out teams like Pittsburgh and Buffalo right there in the final week of last season to get in. Had the big win over Boston, come from behind series victory in the first round. That's all well documented. But I think the part of the whole equation that maybe got a little bit overlooked, and Paul Maurice has talked about this, back on January 1st, 2023, the Panthers played the Rangers. They didn't win that game, but Paul Maurice really liked in particular the way the team finished that game. And from that point on, it felt like that was a point where things were really taking hold for this team, and they were playing a way that was going to be able to get them a lot of success. And you look at the last 45 games of last season, which would be from January 1st on in the regular season. In 45 games, the Panthers finished with 56 points over that span. The Toronto Maple Leafs had 59 points over that span. So the Panthers were right there for better than a half season's worth of time, right there with teams like Toronto, like Carolina, at the point pace they were going at last season. So, yeah, they had to get hot at the end to get that playoff spot locked up. But this was something that was building. And when the Panthers had the run of the cup final, obviously defeat stings. And to get that far and not get the ultimate prize, so like I said, that's a tough pill to swallow. But at the same time, everybody looked at this group and said, this is a team that is just scratching the surface in terms of what they're going to be able to accomplish. This is a team that's going to be in the competitive mix, the contending mix in the Eastern Conference for a number of years to come. Now, you pointed to it. Coming into this year, obviously, Aaron Ekblad, Brandon Montour, Sam Bennett, they were all out to start the season. But tons of credit goes to Bill Zito and the hockey operations staff for identifying a lot of key guys who've been able to come in and who are able to help ease the blow early on when the Panthers were dealing without some key players in the lineup. Also, ton of credit goes to Paul Maurice. Like I said, what he was able to do with this team last year, getting them to the cup final, and then coming into this season, the guys have seen the positive results. Everybody knew the expectations, knew what it took, and they really did just pick right up where they left off last year. And it's really been something special to see. And You look at it right now, the big guns are playing well. They're getting contributions up and down the lineup. Defensively, the Panthers have been one of the best teams in the league. And the goaltending, whether it's been Sergei Bobrovsky or Anthony Stolarz, both have been really good. And that's why this team right now has itself in a spot. We're going into the post-All-Star break part of the schedule. They're going to be putting some pressure on the Boston Bruins, no doubt about that.
Well, I do have to ask you about one of those pieces that's playing so well right now. Sam Reinhart is having a career year. He's already set career highs with 37 goals. He's got 20 power play goals on the season. What has been the difference for him in having, you know, not just a really good year, but an unbelievable year?
Yeah, you know, the thing with Sam that's so interesting is we've all known that he's been a point-of-game guy before. He's one of those guys that's going to get you 30 goals every season. You can mark it down. He's been a rock-solid producer in the National Hockey League. This year, it's just going to different heights. As you mentioned, he's not only leading the Panthers in goals, he's already set a team record for power play goals in a season. I think going into the All-Star break, he's scored in, I believe, 9 straight road games at this point in time, which is a franchise record. Leads the Panthers in game-winning goals, leads the Panthers in shorthanded goals on the season. So he's doing it in every part of the game. And for Sam, I think the part of his game, and Paul Maurice has talked about this a lot, Sam's hockey IQ is just absolutely off the charts. And he's a very responsible two-way guy. He and Barkov have really formed a great bit of chemistry when they've been together. Same thing goes when Sam plays with Anton Lundell, and he's played with him a bit lately, and he's played with him a bit, I should say, each season that he's been with the Panthers. The two of them have a great bit of line chemistry. So I think for Sam right now, it's just a matter of everything's clicking. I've equated it at times to remember the old NBA Jam game on the Sega Genesis when the ball would catch on fire and everything would go in. There are times where it's felt like that's how it's going for Sam Reinhart right now. But again, it's just every part of the game has clicked for him. And he's that power play. The power play has just been able to really find its groove. He's obviously a focal point on that. And Matthew Tkachuk on the power play has been one guy who's really been feeding Sam out in front of the net quite a bit. So that's been a part of the game that's really clicked. But I think the big thing with Sam, too, that, like I said, maybe a lot of people don't realize if you're not watching the Panthers every single night, but his hockey IQ, his two-way game, how responsible he is on the ice, he's second to none. Paul Maurice has given him a lot of praise and said, you know, as far as guys that he's coached, his hockey sense is right up there with a guy like Ron Francis in terms of guys that Paul has coached over his great career and long career behind an NHL bench. So some lofty praise there. And when you throw that into the mix with a guy who's got great offensive instincts, great two-way instincts, he's going to generate chances. He can play with anybody. It's been everything working right for Sam Reinhart this year, no doubt about it.
Now he is an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year, and good for him to have this kind of a season when he's looking for a new contract. But what's been kind of the mood as far as the Panthers being able to re-sign him? Has there been talk of getting something done now, or they want to wait after the season, or how's that looking?
Well, I'm not privy to those conversations that may or may not happen behind closed doors, but I know it's a guy the Panthers obviously would like to keep around, and that's so obviously we'll see what happens in that part of the game, but I can tell you just from the observations, you know, Sam's got great chemistry with his teammates. His teammates love him. He loves being a part of this group. So again, a guy the Panthers would like to have around. We'll see how things play out.
Well, Matthew Tkachuk was a Hart Trophy finalist last season. He's not quite putting up the numbers that he did, and he did start the season coming off the injury. Reinhart's kind of gotten the headlines a bit, but is Matthew Tkachuk starting to heat up, and is he still just as important with this team as he's always been?
He's been an impactful guy every time he stepped on the ice since the day he became a Florida Panther. Now, early on, it was a matter at times the pucks just weren't going in, and he, from the outset this season, leading the Panthers in shots on net. And as you know, just the style that Matthew plays, he's not getting, his shots aren't just dump ins and pucks coming from the perimeter. All his shots are going to be right around the goal mouth area. So he was up near the top or leading the Panthers in shots on net right now, and has been for a big chunk of the season. You know, he's been like I said, making an impact every shift. He's been setting up his teammates. The assists are coming in bushels, and he's been red hot. One of the hottest players in terms of point production since the calendar flipped to 2024. But he's been making an impact every shift, and now we're seeing the pucks go in the net at a really high rate for him. It's one of those things. You felt like all along, eventually he was going to have one of those two-week spans where he scored 8 or 10 goals, and that's pretty much what we've had happen now leading up to the All-Star break. So for Matthew, like I said, whether it's making an emotional impact on a shift, a physical impact on a shift, however he needs to do it, every time he gets on the ice, he is he's making an impact on the game. There just aren't a lot of guys like him. And the other thing with Matthew, it's easy to forget how young he still is. This is a guy whose game is still growing, and his two-way game has really, really continued to develop. And he's been a big part of why the Panthers are such a good defensive team as a unit this season. And you look at his game and the full evolution of it. This is a guy who's just continuing to turn into an elite player at all ends of the ice. So again, early on, I think it was a matter, maybe the pucks just weren't going in, but that trend has reversed, and he's been right up near the top of the Panthers shots on goal leaderboard from the moment the season went on. I would expect the second half success to really be big for him as far as the point production goes, because he's been on a huge roll going into the break.
Well, Matthew Tkachuk's always been known for being a bit of a feisty player, but the Panthers have shown some feistiness lately. I know recently they had the game against the Arizona Coyotes. There was the incident earlier this year with Jason Zucker and Nick Cousins, and you had two fights to start off the game. What was that like as a play-by-play man to call that, and how exciting was that to get going?
Well, it was exciting, and there are a couple of factors to it. Obviously, I'm sure you saw some of the photos and things during warm-up, but yep, there was a little bit of a conference, if you will, out at center ice before the game even started during warm-up. So would have loved to have been a fly on the wall during that, but obviously some things were being sorted out and discussed, and then the game started, and you had Ryan Lomberg and Jack McBain, and then on the face-off following that, you had Jonah Gajewicz and Liam O'Brien, and everything was resolved, and then we played a hockey game after that, and you tell you what it was a real symbol. This is something that this group's always been pretty tight-knit. You saw it really just continue to be a bond that was strengthened even further last year. But I don't think I can overstate it enough. This Panthers team, every guy has everybody's back. It's really a group that has a special bond. And I know maybe making a deep playoff run can strengthen that. The way they had to scratch and claw late last year, that probably had some to do with it. Plus, you just have some great leaders on this team really been the kind of guys that drag everybody into the fight, if you will. And that bond is really strengthened. Like I said, every guy on this team will stand up for the guy next to him. And it shows not only in the physical part of the game, but also just in the way these guys play game to game. They'll tell you that, they want to make sure they're bringing their best every night just for the guy sitting next to them. So it's really been plain and simple, just a group that has as tight a bond as I've ever seen with a group in the National Hockey League. And, you know, just talking to some of the guys, there's no question that that kind of bond, even if it's a bond that forms off the ice, can really lend itself to success on the ice, because you don't want to let down the teammate who's sitting next to you. So I think it just shows just how tightly knit this team is. And like I said, the bond that they've got.
Obviously, there's some familiar names on this team with Tkachuk. We talked about Reinhardt, Sergei Bobrovsky, Alexander Barkov. Is there any players, though, that maybe fans out there don't know about that have kind of emerged this year or been called up to contribute that you think deserve maybe a mention?
I think a handful, you go across the board, and this is kind of the same theme that we had during the playoff run last year, but if you went up and down the lineup last year during the playoffs, every guy had his big, his big playoff moment, which was really cool to see. But this year, I think, first of all, you can't tell the story of the first half for this Panthers team, especially, I think it was November 17th in Anaheim. That was the first night that the Panthers had Ekblad, Montour, and Bennett all in the lineup on the same night. So this is a team that had to deal with some key players being out, specifically on the blue line early on. You can't tell the story about the first half of this Panthers team without mentioning Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who came here on a free agent deal in the summer. And it's proven to be an unbelievably great fit. And it was a great pickup by the Panthers. And OEL's come in and just done a heck of a job. And early on, they needed a guy who was going to be able to log some big-time minutes with no Ekblad, no Montour in there. He certainly can do that. And now with, knock on wood, the blue line healthy, the Panthers right now believe probably organizationally they could go eight or so defensemen deep at the NHL level. So right now they're incredibly deep on the back end. And as you know, if you want to make it through the 82-game grind, if you want to make a deep playoff run, you need to be deep on the defensive end especially. So he was a key pickup. Nico Mikkola, same thing, a free agent pickup who's come in and from the outset really led the Panthers in hits and block shots from the very beginning of the season. Does a lot of things that don't show up on the box score, but he is he's the biggest Panthers blue liner. He covers a lot of ground. He's been a big reason why this team has been really good on the penalty kill this season. And he has some good offensive awareness as well. He knows when he's known for being a shutdown guy, but he's not afraid to jump up in the play when he needs to. The other thing, another guy who we can't talk about the Panthers without mentioning, and obviously you mentioned Barkov, Reinhardt, Tkachuk. You know, these are the names getting the headlines. Sergei Bobrovsky's been really good. But I think Gus Forsling is really starting to get the credit he deserves across the league. This is a guy who can do everything for you, and he can skate like the wind, and he plays in every part of the game. And this is a guy that was another just great pickup right before the season started a couple of years back by Bill Zito and the hockey ops department. They picked him up for nothing from Carolina right before the season because the Hurricanes were the Hurricanes had too many guys. They couldn't. It was one of those situations. Had too many guys. Couldn't keep everybody. Gus Forsling became available, and the Panthers got him. Gave him an opportunity, and he has taken the ball and run with it. And again, this is a guy who's just, like I said, loaded with talent, but he is just a flat-out gamer and fun to watch every night. And if you flip on a Panthers game, like I said, if you haven't watched a ton of the Panthers this season, anybody in the listening audience, you flip on a game. I know you have the guys that get the headlines every night, but watch Gus Forsling. He is just a pleasure to watch on the back end and does a little bit of everything for this Panthers team. You can't tell the story of the Panthers' success without mentioning him.
Wrapping it up with Doug Plagans, the Florida Panthers radio play-by-play guy. I did want to ask you, Doug, this team obviously has been very successful. I don't know what the salary cap situation is for them or if they're looking to maybe add something at the deadline, but is there any area of the team that you think that they could improve on, or is this group pretty much looking, if they do add someone, it would just be maybe for some depth, that this is kind of the roster that, you know, obviously has played well and they're looking to go forward with?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that stuff works out when we get closer to the deadline. We'll say, obviously, you know, any GM out there, I'm sure, would tell you if they had a chance to improve their day-to-day roster, they would certainly entertain that. That being said, and I know I am team media, obviously I'm biased, but I don't think I'm breaking any ground here when I say that, you know, in a salary cap world, it's tough to construct a perfect, an absolutely perfect roster with no flaws. But I think if we were looking at teams up and down the Eastern Conference, Bill Zito and his hockey ops department here have constructed a darn near flawless roster, knock on wood, when this group is healthy. You've got three lines that, you know, you've got the big time scoring lines. You've got four lines that can play. You've got the physical element. You've got a surplus of NHL caliber defensemen, two goalies that are playing well, top five right now, a defensive team overall in the National Hockey League. And like I said, a team that can score when they need to. So, you go up and down the lineup. I think I would probably speak for everybody. If this is the team that the Panthers took into the Stanley Cup playoffs, assuming they keep playing at this pace and make it in, if this is the group they take into the playoffs, I'd be totally comfortable with that. But obviously, as we know, we'll wait and see how things play out. But as far as this roster goes right now, I like it. I like the way it's trending. I like the way it's building. Eddie, something else that's worth mentioning here, sort of unrelated, but something that's worth watching with the Panthers as we get into the second half of the year. This team has played 49 games. The Panthers only have one more road game outside the Eastern time zone. So what that illustrates for you is a couple of things. This team, considering the road grind that they've had, they've done California, they've done Western Canada, they've done Vegas, Colorado, all those long trips, they're all out of the way. Considering the road grind and the mileage this team has logged, obviously flying out of South Florida, we put a lot of miles on in the air over the course of a season. To come out of this part of the season with the record that they've got, that's incredibly impressive. And now going down the stretch, the fact that this team has a chance to be playing those big games in March in the playoff race and only having to travel north and south within the time zone rather than going east and west, crossing over time zones, I think that's something that could be a real luxury for this team moving forward and going down the stretch. And like I said, it shows you that this is a pretty rock solid team when you can go through that much of a road grind and come out of it with the record that they've got right now. So, like I said, it was a grind in the first few months of the season, but I think heading down the stretch, it's going to be a scheduling luxury for this team that they've got all that out of the way.
Hey, Doug, real quick, I'll get you out on this. I know that you are a sports card enthusiast. I definitely collected and loved it as a kid. Did you see the story about the unopened case of the hockey cards that was found in Regina?
Yes, and it's mind-boggling. And what was the from what I gather, it was purchased for like $150 back in the day, and I think the auction has somewhere 3-4 weeks left on it, and it's already over $1 million. Talk about a flip! My goodness. And I mean, it'll be interesting to see what the ultimate buyer chooses to do with it, but I can't believe that has been unearthed.
Yeah, to come across that and know what could be waiting in there, the Gretzky rookie cards, that's, I mean, when I saw that story, and I haven't collected cards in a while, I had like goosebumps at being able to find something like that. It's like a lost treasure that someone came upon, so that's unbelievable. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because I know you do like the sports cards.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling that like I said, that still exists. And obviously a sealed case, that there weren't, you know, variants and insert cards and all that stuff back then. It's just the base Opeachy cards. So, yeah, there are a lot of Gretzky rookies inside that sealed case. There's no doubt about it. Now, obviously, they would be coming straight from PAX, but with those cards, the fact that they're coming straight out of PAX, that does not mean that they're going to come out of those PAX in mint condition. There could be centering issues, the way they were cut back then by Opeachy and the factory, things like that. A lot of them hit the market not in perfect condition. So that's what I'm saying. If they choose to open it looking for a perfect 10 gem mint Gretzky, you know, maybe that's what they choose to do. The ultimate buyer can do whatever they want, but just because those packs are fresh doesn't mean that those cards are all going to be in perfect shape. I think the fact that it's sealed that's the true relic. That's the true mystique of it, is the fact that this thing is fully sealed, and you just don't get that these days.
He is Doug Plagans. He is the radio play-by-play man for the Florida Panthers, NFL Network or NHL Network correspondent, host of Territory Talk and Panthers Insider. Great stuff on the Panthers, Doug. Really looking forward to seeing what they do the rest of the way, and really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Eddie.
Time for the third and final period here on the Puck Podcast, and it's just me, Eddie Garcia, going solo with the emails. Doug is taking part in his Cherokee lessons, and I'm not even actually joking about that. Before we get into your emails, I do want to say thank you to all of our patrons on Patreon. If you would like to support us on Patreon, we would really appreciate it. It is patreon.com/puckpodcast, and we'd like to thank Mike G., who is our latest special friend on Patreon. We appreciate, Mike, your support of the show. Thank you very much. And again, patreon.com/puckpodcast. Also, shout out to our guy Dave over at Tally Hockey Jerseys. TallyCustomHockeyJerseys.com is where you need to go to check out the Puck Podcast team store. You can buy Puck Podcast merchandise. We've got all kinds of cool jerseys,
hats, even beanies, which is probably appropriate right now because of all the cold weather. And you can also support the show and look cool. So go to tallycustomhockeyjerseys.com, check out the Puck Podcast team store. And also, if you have any need for custom hockey jerseys, there's no better person to contact than our friend Dave over at tallycustomhockeyjerseys.com. All right, let's get to your emails. And let's see, the first one coming up is, as I scroll down here, this comes from Quentin. Let's see if Quentin says where he is from. He does. And he says, hello, Doug and Eddie. Greetings once again from the hamlet of Mara, British Columbia, 20 minutes south of Sikkimus, home of Shea Weber. I'm not familiar with the name of that, clearly, as you could tell by my butchering of the name. But thank you, Quentin. Let's see. He says, Doug, I have to take issue with your rant last week about NHL expansion and greedy owners. You were complaining once again about how more teams would be terrible for the NHL and how it would just be greed of the owners driving the latest attempts at expansion. I'm assuming that you are against expansion because you're worried about it, about the on-ice product being watered down or the schedule becoming too unwieldy. I've got a couple of quibbles with your take on this. Firstly, if, as you say, the owners are motivated by only one thing, money, then an unuseful expansion attempt would surely be harmful, at least in the long term, to the value of an NHL franchise. I think it's safe to assume that the owners are, for the most part, not only greedy, but also smart, which is why most of them are financially successful. I'm not sure why you would assume that the owners would knowingly jeopardize long-term success for short-term profits. Also, I think you're suffering from some memory loss because you are failing to acknowledge how previous expansion, especially into non-traditional hockey markets, has been essential for the recent growth of the game in places like California, Arizona, Texas, and Florida. Further expansion into markets like these will continue to entice more and more young athletes to play hockey instead of other sports, which should make hockey and the NHL stronger in the future. I understand your concern about a short-term, watered-down, on-ice product, but in the long term, everyone in hockey will benefit from NHL expansion. Cheers, boys. Love the podcast. Go Canucks! And that is Quentin. Says your farmer friend. Oh, okay. Well, Quentin, obviously, Doug is not here to defend himself. So I apologize for that. Although I would say that all owners are motivated by my money and greed. You're not going to get a lot of owners who are just in it for the love of the game and to make the world of hockey a better place. They are where they are for mostly, I would say, greed purposes, because the franchises value never go down in any sport. It doesn't happen. They always go up. So sports franchises are typically very good investments. Almost every time they're ever sold, it's for a lot more money than they were purchased for. I'm not going to suggest that every owner in the NHL is just some money grubbing a-hole. But I get where Doug is coming from. And I think you bring up some good points, though. Certainly, if you're a hockey player, expansion would be good for you. It's more jobs available. And I do think you make a good point about hockey being expanded into different areas and those areas cultivating more hockey fans and potentially more hockey players. So there are certainly benefits. But I also think, and I think you even kind of concede that it does water down the product a bit as well. I mean, how many playoff teams are we going to have in the NHL? Because that also is revenue for owners, because it's likely they're going to want to have more playoff teams as well. You know, maybe they have maybe the top two seeds in each conference get a bye or something like that, and then you add an extra couple of teams. But there are certainly pluses and minuses to be sure for expansion. I personally wouldn't be in favor of it. But I also concede that I think it's absolutely going to happen. Our next email comes from our longtime listener, Dylan, who is a big Florida Panthers fan. Dylan, I hope you enjoyed the interview with Doug Plagans in the second period. And Dylan says, in Florida, once again here, boy, oh boy, how about those cats, huh, fellas? Specifically, Sam Reinhart, just an insane tear right now going into the All-Star break. 36 goals. So good. Panthers are already looking better than last year at this time, thus far going into the second half of the season. Hope it continues. Go Florida. Hope to make some more games and hopefully another couple of playoff games as well. Anthony Stolarz, after a few bad starts, has turned into a nice number two option behind Bobrovsky. As always, I want to sincerely thank you guys for putting up an awesome show. Also for Doug, thoughts on the Patriots hiring Jerod Mayo as their head coach and now DeMarcus Covington as their defensive coordinator. Again, another question that is directed towards Doug. I cannot answer as I am not a New England Patriots fan. Yeah, you know, you're definitely getting some new blood in there. If you're a Patriots fan, it's not the same old cast of characters that were just kind of recycled over and over again with Belichick and his kids and some of those assistants that that would go away and then come back and go away and come back. Dylan, like I said, hope you enjoyed the second period with our buddy Doug Plagans there. And yes, the Panthers were a team that I absolutely had wrong in my preseason predictions. Did not see them having this kind of success. But they are playing very, very well. This next email comes from Mike, the Caps fan in Florida. And he says, good evening, gents. A lot has been going on, and that is why I've been unable to write in. The holiday season got the better of me, but I did get the best present of all time. My wife and I are expecting our first child. Oh, very nice. Congratulations, Mike. He says, I decided to write in this week to take on Doug's thoughts on Alexi Protas. Ah, that was the player that we didn't know much about, but the Washington Capitals had signed to a five-year extension. He says he's 23 years old, and a five-year extension gets us through most of his time. With the way Ovechkin is currently playing, I don't see him signing another extension in 3 years. The Capitals are in salary cap hell with Anthony Mantha and Evgeny Kuznetsov. Contracts are starting to run out, and I think we are looking what happens when the Ovechkin era ends. A $3 million contract for a potential top six forward that can help bridge the end of the Ovi era to the new era seems pretty good to me. If he exceeds expectations, then he'll be ripe for the picking when the Capitals are consistent sellers during our rebuild. If he stays at top to mid six, then it's not a huge cap and he can help us during the coming rebuild. My current concern is that the Capitals may seek to be buyers when we should sell. We need to start building for the future. We are not a strong playoff team. We are in salary cap hell, and we with no clear way to get our prospects time on ice. If we try to push for a playoff spot, I will be disappointed because we will waste for no reason. I know people disagree with the tank theory. However, you cannot put a cup. However, if you cannot win a cup and are going to be bounced in the first round, why not go for a top 10 pick? We have one. And had one top 10 pick in 2023 in over a decade because we're always in the playoffs. There are multiple issues with the Caps. They lack an identity or are conflicted. Are we a playoff team? Are we rebuilding? Are we retooling? Are we sellers? Are we buyers? I think the Protas signing, in the words of Tom Hanks, Jim Lovell, a Apollo 13 character. All right, there's 1,000 things that can happen in order. We're on number 8. You're talking about number 692. I don't see it as a bad signing, but not a great one. Only time will tell. My hope is that it helps bridge the end of the Ovechkin era and helps us get through the rebuild faster. Mike, the Caps fan in Florida. And certainly on a very random note, as you did bring it up, but Apollo 13 is one of my all-time favorite movies. I love that movie. And every time I don't do a lot of flipping anymore because I think, you know, with streaming, the fun of kind of flipping through the channels and then finding something that you're interested in, it's kind of gone now, right? We don't really do that anymore. But if I ever happen to see Apollo 13 is on, I will almost always stop and watch that movie. We only have two more emails. This next one comes from Michael. And I'm not sure if Michael says where he is writing us from, but he says, Dear Doug and Eddie, with talks of expansion, I can only imagine where the end of the line is. I could easily see the end goal being an NHL team in every city with another major sports franchise already existing. But in the name of money, it's hard to see it stopping there. I'm sure in Bettman's perfect world, every state can have a team. Makes you wonder, though, if money always talks, are we headed towards a split league in the not-so-distant future? Fair schedule making has to have its limits, and I wonder if the compromise of more seats outweighs filling seats with the traveling superstars of the league. Looking around the league, save percentage and goalie stats, I'm reminded of a comment that was made on the show about them there being more goalies that could start than teams, and I tend to agree with that. Even with so many teams struggling, adding to it with saying, I don't think there are nearly enough defensemen in the league for teams. Do you think the next few years will have some additions from other professional men's leagues like Finland or Sweden over prospects to add more experience sooner? Watching the Ducks versus the Sharks. Wow. You were the one. I'm realizing that the NHL needs a new spokes stream for worst teams perpetually trying to make it. There are some good candidates. The Penguins are looking juicy if that aging core gets a little bit worse, and Ottawa could be an easy choice, but they have been going into a rebuild, so you could argue they aren't always trying. I think the choice has to go to the Blue Jackets, a team that seems to forever be chasing the team they're expected to be. Pending playoff misses or complete flops, do you think there is another team about to become the league's biggest try-hard losers? Very interesting question. Certainly the Blue Jackets, unfortunately for them, have been a team that just seems to be constantly spinning their wheels, even when they go out and get a player like a Johnny Gaudreau, which none of us saw coming. And you're thinking, wow, this is going to be the thing that gets them over the hump. And maybe other free agents are going to want to start to sign there, things like that. It just never seems to work out. Maybe Adam Fantilli can be that franchise player that they build around. But no, I mean, it's funny. There's talk of expansion for the NFL potentially overseas. I have not heard, and nor have I envisioned the NHL potentially having franchises overseas. Although, I mean, it would make as much sense as anything when you look at the different number of players that obviously come from Europe to play in the NHL. I wonder what the percentage is compared to the NBA, because obviously you're now getting some pretty serious NBA stars like Nikola Jokic and Luka Doncic and those types of guys coming over here and being very successful. But I would guess the NHL has more European professionals than the NBA does as a league. So, but yet, I don't know, the costs. I mean, obviously the NHL doesn't make the revenue of an NFL or an NBA. So, you know, travel costs as far as having expansion overseas, probably not something that's on the front burner there for the NHL. Our final email comes from, of course, Hart in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. Gentlemen, I hope you are well, he says. How does Jarmo Kekalainen still have a job, speaking of the Blue Jackets? I was planning on writing this before word came out that Patrick Laine was entering the player assistance program. I'm not piling on, but the news does not exactly refute the point I'm going to make either. The team is built around Johnny Gaudreau, who used to be called Johnny Hockey when he was good at it, and Patrick Laine, who has all sorts of personality, a modicum of which may actually be positive. Laine is a prima donna, always has been, always will be. He has the physical attributes and skill to be a poor man's Mark Messier, but his character has destined him to be a one-dimensional floater, albeit with a killer shot. And look at Columbus's drafting history. They've had many early picks, most of whom have become busts. They're either picking duds or more likely can't develop their players. On Sunday, ultra-talented defenseman David Jurek voiced his displeasure at being sent back to the AHL. Here's another highly touted youngster who seems disgruntled. And to be honest, he sounds like a bit of a spoiled brat in the Laine vein. I recall Laine pretty much insisting he play on the Jets' first line when he was not ready. I utterly loathe this new age of entitlement. And let's not forget the brain-dead hiring of dinosaur Mike Babcock, who didn't even make opening night without alienating the team's up-and-comers. How about goaltending? They've had issues in net for years, and Jarmo hasn't done squat to shore that up. Sorry, he did acquire Jonathan Quick, who is apparently good again, but the Blue Jackets didn't play him once before letting him go. I fear for the futures of talented youngsters Adam Fantilli, Yegor Chinnikov, Kirill Marchenko, David Jurek, Kent Johnson, Alex Texier, and Justin Danforth. If history is any indication, many of them will fail to meet their potential in the development dystopia that is the Columbus Blue Jackets. It's time for management and coaches, the coaching staff to go before the next generation Columbus turns out to be like the ones before it. Warm regards, Hart, in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. That's good stuff, Hart. I know that you're not a Blue Jackets fan, but it definitely speaks well to you wanting to see markets being healthy. And Columbus, certainly those fans there have not been given a lot to be proud of or to cheer about, and that organization does seem to be a rudderless ship. And it's a very, very fair question. I think Jarmo Kekalainen, when he was hired, was thinking outside the box, obviously bringing in a guy from overseas to run an NHL team. And it just, it hasn't gone obviously very well. Not that there aren't challenges in a market like Columbus, but he has been given enough time to have a vision and to try and lay tracks for it and have it turn into something. And it just hasn't happened. And you're right. The Mike Babcock hire certainly was ill-advised, to say the least. And I'm not really, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm completely plugged into the Blue Jackets, but that David Yerkes thing, I mean, why would you not play him? I'm not real familiar with it, but when you've got a young player that wants ice time and you're not going anywhere, why would you send him back to the AHL? And maybe he's, I mean, like I said, maybe he's just completely dogging it, or maybe he feels entitled, as you said, with this generation of players, and he's not working hard. I don't know, but he would seem to, like, you know, let's make this a roster of some of these young guys and give them as much ice time as possible and help them to develop. But no, it's a mess there in Columbus, no doubt about it. But I love your passion talking about a team that you really don't have any connection to. But it's not gone well. It has not gone well for the Columbus Blue Jackets. That'll do it for this week's Puck Podcast. Oh, I forgot. Where's my horn at? Oh, here it is. Thank you so much for everyone who took the time to send us an email. But for my co-host, Doug Stolhand, I'm Eddie Garcia. Thank you, as always, for listening this episode of the Puck Podcast. We'll talk to you next week. I'm relieved that we're actually going to have some games to talk about, because I thought everybody had a week off. What a dummy. So anyway, thanks for the emails. Thanks for listening. And thank you, as always, for Doug Stolhan and Eddie Garcia. We'll talk to you next week with another edition of the Puck Podcast.